Welcome back, everyone, to the Crypto Rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency. From the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the charts, we spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And man, we have another action-packed episode today. And I know what you're thinking, you're saying, Brendan, every single week you enter this zone, you say we have an action-packed episode. And that's right. And this week, above all else, it is for an absolutely acceptable reason, because we're going to be talking about the potential Ethereum ETF approvals. We've been waxing and waning over this issue, saying it's likely to happen. Now it doesn't look like it's happening. Well, massive news just hit the market. It looks like it's going to be happening. Everyone's scrambling. Prices are tearing. We're seeing things that are related to Ethereum up 20, 30% over the last few days. Bitcoin is just at all-time highs again. So much is happening, along with a lot more in the news today. But man, before we get too involved here, TiVo, before I start ranting, welcome. How are you feeling?
Feeling great. Really, really exciting week. And like you said in the beginning, we tell you that it's an action-packed episode every week, because it is. We had Bryce on last week, and I was going through our clips, and you know, we were spitballing. All of us were talking about, hey, we think, you know, it's more likely than not that all-time highs and price action going higher was where we saw the market going, and it was trending that way. And there was a clip of I was talking about, like, hey, this show is all about giving you breadcrumbs. We line out every week, you know, some breadcrumbs of where we think things might be going. And while it's never financial advice, we're just kind of spitballing our knowledge and what we know. You know, we were all leaning higher, and then sure enough, a little positive catalyst. And now a lot of people might be looking back and saying, hey, man, I wish I followed the breadcrumbs. So we hope you're in the market. We hope you're enjoying the price action. But there is so much to talk about this week. And I'm super excited because of the price action. But then it's launching Bryce and I as we trek out to Austin next week to attend Consensus, which is going to be a fantastic week. So, yeah, just a lot of momentum leading into an awesome couple weeks here.
Yeah, I was sending both of you on a mission before you left, saying, guys, I need you to track down the Bloomberg intelligence gentleman. Go find James Seyfarth. Go find all of them and make sure you get a meeting with them at or while you guys are in Austin, because we need to know more information about this. And we got a lot that we're going to inform everyone about today. But man, you can never have more. And I think one of the unique things about the situation is it really did catch almost everyone off guard. And we're going to look at some kind of posts and tweets and just everything that's explaining just how out of left field all of this kind of came forward. So let's kick things off. What in the world happened since we last talked? Why are we so excited? Why are prices ripping? Well, it really all starts with the Ethereum ETFs. They were having about a 25% chance of approval. We've talked about how they've gotten moved from their date of May to June. And then we just recently saw that a lot of them got moved to July. A lot of people were even saying, hey, it's probably not even going to happen by July. We were even speculating that. It looked like it was like a 20% chance of happening. And so we were realistically saying, hey, maybe later on this year, early next year, it's probably likely. You know, we always said that it's not a matter of if it's going to happen. We said it's a matter of when it's going to happen. But all signs were pointing that this is going to be something that happened later this year. Everything was turned on its head yesterday, on Tuesday, or rather on Monday, excuse me. And the numbers came out, and it's like all of a sudden, hey, we're going from a 25% chance of approval to a 75% chance of approval. And we have a deadline literally tomorrow. So we'll be learning more as we kind of enter into the back half of this week. Now, it's not like we're going to find everything. It's not like, hey, these things are going to go live tomorrow and everyone's going to start trading and billions of dollars are going to start flowing in. It's not quite like that. And we're going to explain a little bit more around that area as we kind of push in here. But let's talk about what's expected. So again, we went from that 25% chance of approval. We went from that later approval date being likely to now all of a sudden things are shifting. And it looks like we are at a 75% chance of approval. And the numbers are actually still able to go up from here. That's something that some of the gentlemen over at Bloomberg Intelligence and other ETF analysts were looking at and saying, hey, it can actually be higher than this. We just need to understand what's happening a little bit better. And then we can go from 75, maybe 80, maybe 90, something along those lines. And so things can get better. And again, is a 75% chance a 100%? Is it a certainty? No. However, it's looking likely. And I think that's a really positive thing. And so in weight of this news, we're seeing Ethereum just tear. And it's not just Ethereum. And we're going to look at this when we get on the charts in just a little bit. But from the day that this happened, I mean, Ethereum opened up around $3,000. And as of yesterday, it went all the way up to around $3,850. This was about a 26.5% move in about a 48-hour window. And that's big. And so what this did was this destroyed the Bitcoin dominance chart. This destroyed the ETH-BTC ratio that we've been saying has been in a downtrend for so long. And if this happens, you know, the catalyst that I think everyone is wanting to hear is this could be the catalyst for an altcoin season. The long-awaited, long-anticipated. Again, we've seen Bitcoin be so dominant. We've seen altcoins do good, but we've been waiting for the true altcoin season. And if this happens, it really could be a catalyst for something like that, because it could be the thing that tips the Bitcoin dominance iceberg or just anything, just over the edge from here. And that's something that a lot of people are excited about, because there's a lot of money to be made in these altcoin seasons. So let's go ahead and pull up the tweet kind of talking about this two-step process, TiVo, and I'll hand it off to you, because that is something that I think is worth touching on right off the gate or right out the gate, because a lot of people think, oh, ETFs are approved, we're live same day, we're trading, money's flowing in. It's not quite like that.
Great point. And yeah, so let's, before we kind of speculate, look at the charts, let us look at what we do know. So what we do know is that, and maybe you want to wrap a little tinfoil hat on. I'm a big tinfoil. They call me tinfoil hat TiVo sometimes in my friend group. And so you got to be like, okay, well, what happened? Because our guy, James Seyfarth, for weeks, or last couple weeks, and he was even joking at himself, was tweeting like, it's not happening. It's not happening. Yeah. So what did happen? You know, you have to think that people in the SEC and things are getting political. We have a segment later in the show talking about some political stuff in the crypto markets, which would be interesting. But like, it's getting a little political in the crypto space. And you got to wonder what calls were made for people to wake up yesterday morning. And then all of a sudden, all this action starts hitting the Bloomberg newswire to up these odds from 25 to 75%. So here's what we do know. The 75% odds of approval is for what's called the 19B-4. That deadline is tomorrow, May 23rd. But even if that gets approved, we still need the S1 filings. So the S1 filings, according to James, could take weeks, possibly even months. And you need those S1 filings before you can begin trading. So obviously we hope that these 19B-4s get approved tomorrow. That would be great. There's a lot of action. I believe I just saw on the wire that, actually, since we're live here on Twitter, I saw the wire that BlackRock just filed here. Oh, more political crypto stuff there. Here we go, BlackRock. BlackRock just updated its 19B form. So the update means that there's communication going back and forth between the SEC and BlackRock, right? So that's what you want to see. And according to, let's see, what's the other one? Everyone is scrambling. This was...
Yeah, I mean, this... It's exactly what we want to see. The fact that there is communication between these TradFi entities and the SEC about this stuff is really good, because for a while we weren't seeing that. And that was one of the biggest red flags that these ETFs might not happen anytime soon, is because there wasn't this stream of communication. Now there is. And so it kind of puts us right into this next tweet over here. But people are scrambling, TiVo.
Yeah, they're scrambling. Their percentages upwards. And here's another Bloomberg analyst saying that, like, you know, we're going to leave it at 75 until we see more filing updates. But all those filing updates were happening yesterday afternoon and this morning, obviously. And then these guys were saying all the interns and team members are going to have a couple sleepless nights. And I think Van Eck actually retweeted them and were like, we don't need sleep, or said something pretty funny. So Van Eck seems a little pretty confident as well in the social media stance to at least you know, acknowledge that this is going on. So all positive stuff for the you know, the 19B-4s, but you know, we won't start trading till the S1s, but I don't think that will stop speculation of piling into ETH, because we saw that with Bitcoin, the Bitcoin ETF.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're even openly saying, hey, everyone's scrambling here, and Vanek and some of these other players are coming in, and they're like, oh, we don't need sleep. Like, they're all, they all know what's going on. They're all experiencing this, and it shows that the TradFi entities, the intelligence entities, like, all these different groups are all like, what in the world just happened here? But this is a good thing. This is a good thing for everyone. And if we go back and we look at what happened during the Bitcoin ETF, that's when Bitcoin went from like $30,000-$40,000 up to a new all-time high of $74,000 afterwards. And it had this huge monumental run afterwards. And we're going to talk about that, and we're going to show what the charts look like and what could happen to Ethereum price, because I still think that a $10,000 Ethereum, a five-figure Ethereum, I think it's on the table.
Brendan, come on now. Before we do that, I wanted to get your take on these filings that are coming in. We forgot to mention that all these filings are being updated to remove staking. So I think that's that was the negotiation between the SEC that they came out of the gate with to get this moving. It's like, okay, we're going to start moving on this, but no staking. So that's what people are seeing in these new updated filings, is people are taking out the staking. So I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, and you know, that might have been the bottleneck. That might have been the bottleneck of why everything stopped and why the ETFs went down in their percentage of passing. And it, that could have been the non-negotiable, where they're like, hey, if you remove the staking stuff out of this, we can get this ball rolling and then you can fight for it later. And that's probably what happened here. They probably said, okay, fine, you know, staking's cool. It's not that important. We'd rather get these things passed and maybe we can work them in at a later point in time. And so staking is removed. And for the people wondering why, well, there's complications. You know, the Bitcoin ETF, for example, it doesn't have staking. It's a proof of work consensus mechanism. It doesn't have staking even available on Bitcoin unless you go to like a layer two on something like Stacks or something like that, maybe. But you know, natively, Bitcoin doesn't have staking, so it was never a part of those ETFs, and it doesn't look like it's going to be around of in this first batch of the Ethereum ETFs either, because then it starts going into some potential security laws, according to the SEC, and these TradFi companies just want to avoid them. They don't seem like it's one of these non-negotiables. So I'm not too worried about it either. I don't think that there has to be staking capabilities right out the gate. For me, that's not a super big concerning point. Again, I think it would be added later, so it doesn't concern me too much. But also, Ethereum didn't have staking for years, and it was still very widely used and adopted. And even though it has staking now, again, it's cool. But I think a lot of people are still going to put money into this. One of the other things to look at here is that what would happen if $1 billion came into the Ethereum ETFs, right? Because everyone always says that they don't think that the Ethereum ETFs are going to see the same level of volume and inflows that the Bitcoin ETFs did. And I would agree with that. But I also think that they don't have to see the same level of volume and inflows in any of that, because it's a fraction the size of the market cap. So when we look at the market cap of Bitcoin, for example, it's 1.3, almost 1.4 trillion dollars. We look at the market cap of Ethereum, it's around $450 billion. So we have something that is a fraction the size of Bitcoin's market cap. And so it would require several times less money, several times less volume and inflows to have the same essentially impact in price. So it's going to take significantly lower amounts of money to impact it the exact same way that it did Bitcoin. And so when we're looking at this, I think that's something to pay attention to. Even if we don't see $10 billion in Ethereum ETF inflows, it's okay. I think that what we see in maybe like $1 billion or $2 billion in Ethereum ETF inflows could have the same impact as maybe $10 billion in Bitcoin ETF inflows. So that's something to kind of consider, just looking at the market cap of these things and understanding that one is smaller. And so, yes, it's probably going to have lower numbers come in, but it could be impacted the same way, if not potentially even greater from there.
Do you have a take on, I'm seeing a couple tweets here about it. Do you have a take that the no staking is positive for ETH as well?
You know, I wouldn't say it's positive. No. I wouldn't say it's positive.
The things that I'm reading, I don't fully understand it. Like from a technical term, they're like, but if there's no staking, it makes other people's staking more valuable. If you weren't in the ETFs, and then it would be more centralized if these big firms were staking such a large amount. I don't know. Just wonder your opinion.
It's a double-edged sword because they're right. And if more people are staking, it could potentially cause a little bit of dilution. And then you also have these centralized entities that are in control of large amounts of Ethereum. So now they are bigger shareholders, essentially. On the flip side of that, it also makes it more secure. And so whenever you are looking at a staking network, you want to see TVL numbers go up and you want to see more money in the ecosystem and being locked away. Because also what that would do is if there's more money in staking, then that's being taken directly out of the circulating supply. So people would say, yeah, maybe that lowers staking rewards because it is more diluted now, but the circulating supply of the market would actually be going away. And so then there would be a supply and demand issue there that would probably appreciate price, even though potentially staking might be getting a little bit lower for a lot of the people that are involved. And so it's a double-edged sword, right? You're making the network more secure, you're making TVL go up, and also you are taking Ethereum out of the circulating supply, helping the actual token price. And so those are the benefits. But then you have the flip side, kind of like what you were talking about over here, that people aren't as happy about. And so I think it really depends on the lens that you look at it. But I don't think it's a bad or a good thing either way. You know, it's kind of depends on what side of the argument that you're on here. I get both sides, but I don't think it's anything like, oh, this is the clear wrong answer and this is the clear right answer. This is clearly negative. That is clearly positive. I don't think it's that simple because there's pros and cons to both sides.
Yeah. I think it would be interesting to see leading up to the S1 approval and actual trading, how much TVL gets locked away before the ETFs can buy. That would be an interesting stat to keep tabs on.
Yeah, I mean, we already saw billions of dollars of Bitcoin locked away in the Bitcoin ETFs. It was like, I think it's up to like 5% of Bitcoin's supply is now in these ETFs. And we were already seeing supply dwindling on exchanges, on OTC desks, on all these other things. We saw kind of a supply crisis start to happen. And the same thing could already begin to happen with Ethereum as well, because the difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum here is that Bitcoin has like a really small inflation rate. I think it's around maybe 1 or 2%, and we can fact check me on that. But it's low. That's the takeaway. Ethereum is different in that for the last year or so, almost a year and a half, Ethereum has been largely deflationary. So that's burning away at the supply on top of whatever might be happening here. So Ethereum could also see a real supply crisis as it continues to deflate, but also as potentially a lot of this stuff gets locked away in these ETFs or in staking contracts or whatever might happen. So, a lot happening.
Hell yeah. Well, let's get everybody's favorite part of the show. Let's hit the charts.
Let's look at the charts. So when we are kicking things off with, we're going to switch things up. We're going to look at Ethereum first here because it's Ethereum's day. But what we have over here is Ethereum just skyrocketing. This thing took off, as we said, it took off from around $3,000 all the way up to around $3,850. It was about a 26% move to the upside in about a 48-hour window. And in fact, if we measure this off the lows over here, it was even bigger. It was about a 34-35% move in about a one-week time span. And what this did is this brings Ethereum kind of back up to one of its main resistance levels, and it's trying to break through it. So we'll kind of see what happens. I think that this $36 to $3,700 zone right around here is one that we clearly saw Ethereum use as a support up here, right? I mean, we closed candles on it upon the way up. We bounced here and here and here. And then as soon as we broke down, we retested it as resistance here and here and here and here. And so now we're coming up to this very significant and historical level for Ethereum. Beyond this, we have the cycle highs, right at $4,000 to $4,100. this is the primary resistance beyond this point for Ethereum. This is the level that I think everyone needs to be paying attention to. If you like charts or trading or anything like that, you're probably paying attention to this level. Now, the side effects of this, you know, obviously Ethereum had a really, really great candle. It broke out of the falling wedge. It broke out of the downtrend. It looks like a reversal, and it found a really nice rounding bottom down here as well. These are all great signs to see from a technical standpoint. On the flip side of this, if we go and we look at Bitcoin dominance, like we talked about earlier, destroyed. This thing was looking like it was primed to retest the highs. The Ethereum ETF news comes out and it just goes off a cliff on Monday from 56% all the way down to 54%. I know that sounds like a really small move, but when we're looking at Bitcoin dominance, that's not small. Again, that's a pretty steep move. It erased quite a bit, like a few weeks of upwards movements over here, almost overnight. And so Bitcoin dominance is tanking. It hasn't broken its uptrend yet. However, that's a pretty strong sign. And we haven't even gotten the Ethereum ETF approval this far. So we're seeing Bitcoin dominance kind of tank. But also, I think the even more convincing chart is the ETH BTC chart. Because when we look at one like this, this thing has been in a downtrend for a while, right? There's no argument against it. We look at the Ethereum compared to Bitcoin chart. Bitcoin has been outperforming Ethereum for over a year now, all the way back since 2022. In fact, it goes even further back than that. But for about a year and a half, 2 years now, Ethereum has been getting outperformed by a lot of things. Has it been doing awful and falling? No, but it's been getting outperformed by Bitcoin. It's been getting outperformed by Solana. It's been getting outperformed by a lot of its competitors. And essentially what that does is the Ethereum chart has just been an underperforming asset compared to so many other cryptos. And what we're seeing with this move over here is a gigantic rise in Ethereum dominance compared to Bitcoin specifically, and also against a lot of these other cryptos. If we do like ETH compared to Solana, for example, which might be a little bit harder for us to find, but we'll come back to that one. The Ethereum compared to Solana chart looks very similar. And so here we are, we have Ethereum just skyrocketing in terms of dominance against Bitcoin. Over here, it did about a 20% move over the last couple of days, and it's trying to break over the 200-day moving average, which for a long time, we look at this yellow line over here, and kind of ever since the top, this has been an area where Ethereum has come up, rejected, and just over and over again, the whole way down over here, this has been the line in the sand for Ethereum. So if it can reverse this, if it can start closing candles over this in a convincing manner for a decent amount of time, then this could be the reversal. We've seen a little bit of a game of peekaboo for the last, you know, several times over here where we get maybe a 1 week consolidation, but this could potentially be the sign that we see the dominance or the pivot in the bottom of Ethereum dominance over here. So it's something to look out for because this affects more than just the price of Ethereum, you know, going up 25, 26% in 2 days. If we look at things that are against Ethereum, we had Solana and a lot of the Ethereum competitors kind of pulling back yesterday. But I think the bigger takeaway than the Ethereum competitors is the things that are directly a part of the Ethereum ecosystem. MakerDAO took off 14% candle. We had Optimism took off, put in a 18% candle. Polygon put in a 10% candle. Chainlink over here, just this thing's still on a tear. And the list goes on. I think Uniswap is worth looking at as well. It put in a 22% candle in a single day. We also have Compound, which started tearing. It did, I think, about 12% in about a 48-hour window. And you get the picture that I'm starting to paint here. These cryptos that are associated with Ethereum here, Lido's another great example of this. Rocket Pool's another great example of this. They all started tearing in the wake of this ETF news because this ETF would impact more than just Ethereum. It would also impact the applications that are built on top of it or associated with it. And that's probably one of the big takeaways. And so we saw everything inside of the Ethereum ecosystem kind of ripping in light of this news. And it's one of those things that I'm going to be looking at going forward, saying, okay, you know, do I want to get, you know, I know that this news might be coming up. Do I want to get exposure to Ethereum? Or do I want to get exposure to something that's built on top of Ethereum? And then also just looking at which platforms are going to be able to benefit from this the most. Is it the liquid staking platforms? If we do get staking eventually, is it the DEXs? Because there's going to need to be some sort of trading done. Is it the centralized exchanges? Because they might be kind of the middleman and the custodians here. You know, who is going to benefit from this the most? And that's the internal monologue that I'm having at this point in time, is saying, you know, what kind of players are going to be affected by this, and ultimately just how can we capitalize on it? So that's one of the big things that I'm looking at over here. If we look at the Bitcoin chart, we talked about this thing going all the way up, and I'm going to just take off the watermark for a sec. I feel like it's getting in the way. But if we look at the Bitcoin chart, this thing is moving back up to all-time highs. We saw it kind of create this pivot over here, bounced off 60K, and we said, hey, look at the 50-day moving average. If this thing breaks, it can retest the low 70,000s. It's been one of the big talking points. The 50-day moving average has been a menace for weeks, and we broke it, and what do you know? We went right back up to the highs at the low 70,000s. And so now we have this sideways chop range, TiVo, where Bitcoin has been going from support to resistance, support, resistance, support, you know, resistance. And we're just chopping around in this nice little zone. And it's been about a $13,000-ish zone here where we've been bouncing around in between. And everyone's big question is, you know, will this be the time that we break higher? And we'll have to wait and see. You know, this is one of those areas where I'm watching it closely. I don't want to get too over-levered when we are this close to a historical resistance level that is also an all-time high. But this is one of those zones that I'm watching carefully, because obviously if we reject here, we could have room to kind of come back down for a nice little dip, see a bit of a decent size retracement, maybe another $5,000 or so, and pull back a little bit across the market. However, if we break out here, there's a lot of upside potential. And one of the big things that I've been seeing circulating around is all the liquidations it would cause if Bitcoin and Ethereum kind of broke out to new cycle highs here. And that could be a very big thing that could cause us to have another leg to the upside. So when we're looking at the crypto markets as we're kind of headed into this week, you know, keep an eye on a couple of these zones, especially for Bitcoin at a crucial level, crucial zone as it's approaching 72 to almost 74,000. This is the primary resistance that's holding it back from another leg to the upside. And the last thing that I wanted to show before we go back to the news and we talk about everything that's happening on that side of the spectrum is just showing everyone what happened during the Bitcoin ETF. And so here is the date of the Bitcoin ETF right here on January 11th, right around here. And so we saw a little bit of a retracement, but in light of this news, this is what happened after the Bitcoin ETF. We went down a little bit, and then we went from $39,000 all the way up to $74,000. And we had this gigantic extended move to the upside. So now we're looking at the Ethereum ETF over here and going, well, is it possible that if we get an approval and this thing starts trading, who's to say the same thing can't happen for Ethereum? Now, Bitcoin, again, it's a larger asset, but it still saw an appreciation from the low to the top over here of about 100%. Who's to say that Ethereum can't do 100% move here? And what that would do to the price of Ethereum is that would bring it up even a little bit higher to around $7,000. Now, I said that I think that a $10,000 Ethereum is possible, not a guarantee, but I think it's possible. And I hold to that. So time will tell. Again, I think it's a reality. We'd definitely be pushing for a lot there because Ethereum would have to get pretty big in market cap. But I do think that it's something that is on the table. And depending on upon how widely this is adopted and how many people kind of enter in, I wouldn't say that it's something insane. Now, I've seen six-figure Ethereum predictions. I think that's a little bit too much for this cycle, in my opinion. But you know, I think five figures is something that is bullish, but on the table.
What percentage are we away from Ethereum all-time high?
We're not that far. We are, if we're going to measure this out, about 31% from all-time highs.
I mean, I've never financial advice on this show, as we know. I just feel like that's a 30% trade. Like, how could you not want to be exposed to that? Because you learn through the Bitcoin ETF that traders are going to start speculating this. The Wall Street guys, I've said that, you know, all these guys I see on TV all the day, you know, nobody told you they were buying the no one told you they were buying real Bitcoin leading up to the Bitcoin ETF. And then after the approval, and like you just showed the 100% run up, I'm telling you, man, all these guys were like, oh, I'm selling my Bitcoin at 100% profit. I bought it back, you know, way back, you know, before the ETF approval when it was coming up. And, you know, they were again, victory lapping their gains, which is great. You know, that's what they want to do and promote themselves on TV. But none of them, and I mean none of them, came out and told us that they, you know, told on TV that they were buying it leading up to it. And these guys are on TV every week. So I think that once this gets approved, and then like James said, you still have 3-4 weeks, a couple months until it actually starts trading. I'm really interested to see the price action leading up to the approval, and then obviously after as well. But leading up to it, I think is going to be a really interesting period.
Yeah, and we've just started finding out who is buying the Bitcoin ETFs. Not because they're telling us and they're disclosing and they want everyone to know. No, it's been because of the 13F filings and like regulatory standards that say that if you have to buy over X amount of something, you have to disclose it publicly. And so the 13F filings come out. This is essentially a quarterly thing. And we've seen a ton of players, not just in the US, but across the globe do this as well. I mean, we just saw the Bank of Montreal, which is a 1.3 trillion CAD, you know, asset manager, now saying that they have Bitcoin exposure. We also have the second largest European bank. We had BNP, I believe it's called Paribas, that reported that they have Bitcoin ETF exposure. We have the insurance giant MassMutual and the $34 billion South State, which has 300 different branches. All these people are saying, oh yeah, we have Bitcoin exposure. We've also seen 12 of the top 25 US hedge funds get Bitcoin exposure. 11 of the largest 25 registered investment advisors get Bitcoin exposure. And we've had 405 additional advertisers advisors with at least $1 billion in assets get Bitcoin exposure. On top of this, we see states like the Wisconsin Pension Fund getting Bitcoin exposure. And everyone in the government is fighting for it. And so kind of to, you know, this almost segues into our next point, but it's also going off of what you were saying, TiVo, in that a lot of people are getting this stuff. And most of the time we hear the success story afterwards and we don't get to see as it's happening live. But then there's other situations like this where they're legally inclined to disclose it. But it doesn't mean that the average person is going to go and read through these filings and figure out that all those names are getting Bitcoin exposure. And to the average person, they would never have known that. You know, they're not the ones reading these filings. So, man, I mean, it's crazy how it's getting adopted here. Crazy.
I was on a walk yesterday and I was thinking about just this kind of stuff. And I was like, it's about feeling early. I was like, man, I still feel like we're early. Like as much as ever, politically it's supercharged, which we're about to talk about, but just like my friends, like, you know, the test of like your circle of friends and family and just, you know, like people aren't just, they're still just not super interested in it.
I think it's going to take a 100K Bitcoin or near that. Maybe not 100K. I think it's actually going to take before Bitcoin gets to 100K. I think we're going to start seeing that come back. And I think that that has to be the zone because that is going to be such an interesting talking point, right? Everyone's going to be like, can it hit 100K? Will it hit 100K? And I think that's when the friends will start hitting up, you know,
and they did when it was approaching all time highs. You got a little bit of that hype, but then it's when, because then everybody came back and bought the top, and then everybody got shilled out.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that
human psychology,
it never works to buy high and sell low.
No, not at all. But I have a great political segment here that we can switch over to, because this has been a wild week with ETH, obviously, and the SEC and all that stuff. But we are, and we'd be remiss not to say that we are in a hot political climate all over the place, and it's an election year. But who would have thought that crypto and Bitcoin specifically would be, I don't want to say center stage, but it's in the main event. You know what I mean? And we had something fresh off the newswire as well that I don't even think you know, Brendan. So we'll start with this. So let's start with this week. Last week we talked about Donald Trump having a crypto event at Mar-a-Lago. This week he comes out and announces that he's officially accepting Bitcoin and crypto for his campaign. And I mean, that's so woo. Obviously, yeah, woo. So Trump is pro crypto, pro Bitcoin. So now on the other side, this came out yesterday. This is a text message from President Biden's camp. So, you know, if you're on his email list or text message list, you got this this video and note. And, you know, kind of saying, hey, you know, Trump's getting cryptocurrency executives and oil barons are coming out of the woodwork and giving, you know, $800,000 checks at glitzy events. Basically trying to say like, hey, you know, these high end people are donating to Trump and crypto currency and oil, you know, traditionally has that, you know, I don't know. I think oil, you know, people and crypto kind of like a scumbaggy vibe, right?
Can we just Photoshop a picture of Bryce in the like chic attire just on the screen right now? That's what I'm envisioning.
Yeah, that picture went in our group chat. let me see if I can get it up here. Hold on. But I guess the idea is like, do you agree that that's kind of what they're trying to paint the picture of? Is like, you know, oil execs and scumbag, you know, cryptocurrency executives.
It's funny because when you think of crypto traders, you don't usually think of like these high end button up tie, like rich oil people. Yeah, there we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Speaking of rich oil people, here's Chic Bryce. That's exactly who
I've heard
Biden.
The legends.
Yeah, that's exactly who Biden was talking about. That guy right there.
That guy. He is directly who he was talking about. But no, I mean, I do think it's a little bit funny because when you think of crypto traders, you don't think of this clean cut, you know, suit and tie, extremely rich. Like, I hate to say it, but you kind of think of like Wall Street bet degenerate traders when you think of the crypto space. You don't think of something super high end.
The meme lords. So the meme lords.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. So it's funny, but this is becoming a big political issue. It really is. And now we're seeing it get talked about everywhere because they're trying to overturn SAB 121. And President Biden's getting a ton of flack from that. And so, again, this isn't a political, you know, issue of like left or right or whatever, but the truth of the matter is that this is now a political talking point. I mean, we saw both sides literally just talk about it. One saying I'm pro crypto, one saying I'm anti crypto, one saying I'm accepting it, one saying I'm not, one saying that if, you know, a crypto bill gets to my desk, I'm going to deny it. The other one being like, oh, I would probably accept this thing. And now, you know, the pressure is building. And the whole reason why we're bringing this up is because when SAB 121 went through the Senate, that was the first time in crypto history that this has ever happened. And in order for that to go through, there was an overwhelming majority of Democrats that agreed to it, which is historically has not been the case. It's an anomaly. And the one thing that brought both sides of the political parties together was cryptocurrency. And that's a really hard thing to do. It doesn't happen often. You don't have these two parties that generally don't get along, getting along and agreeing, not just agreeing an overwhelming majority on an issue, but crypto is the one thing that they're all coming together for and saying, hey, we are agreeing on this, including the majority leader, Chuck Schumer. He's been a huge part of, you know, the president's support here, but now he's even not. And so it's starting to put, and this is the reason why we bring it up, it's starting to put a lot of pressure on the current president, President Biden, because now he has internal pressure of his own party members, his own majority leader, a ton of them now disagreeing with the way that crypto is being handled politically. And then you also have the opposing party from his campaign adversary this year, Donald Trump, saying the opposite too. So he has internal pressure from his own party, external pressure from his competitor, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on him over here. And it's crazy to think that
Donald Trump wants to build a crypto army. That was the quote that came out this morning.
Yeah, I mean, look at this. And it's crazy to think that we are in a 2024 U.S. election, and this is the talking point. Like, crypto is one of the main talking points of this election. I wouldn't be surprised if we get on stage for some of these debates and we see more stuff like this in, like, the professional debate setting. It's just
so
crazy.
Let me pause you there and show you that this is hot off the press 20 minutes ago while we were charting. And then we just had this discussion. You teed it up perfectly, but this is fresh out of the White House.
Let's see it. Let's see it. What we got here?
President Biden will not veto Fit 21 crypto bill if passed today.
Woo! And that's what I mean. The pressure will build and the tension is there. And this is something that he said he will shoot down previously. I mean, he just has not been a fan of it. But here we go. Pressure is building.
Absolute fire tweet from the Crypto 101 X team. Absolute panic from Liz Warren.
Oh, she is not going to be happy about this one. She is not going to be happy.
She started her campaign in the fall, or the winter, was building the anti-crypto army. That was her graphic.
Well, we'll see what happens when the anti-crypto army meets the crypto army. But for the time being, it looks like the crypto army is winning here. And
shocking. What a week. I mean, that's what I was saying about the SEC. Like, put the tinfoil hat on. You know, the polls are the polls, whether you believe them or this poll or that poll. But all the polls are saying that Trump has a lead, a small lead, basically. And, you know, the White House is trying to figure out how to market the current president to the people. And the people overwhelmingly seem to want Bitcoin, or at least the ones that do want Bitcoin and crypto are definitely loud. And, you know, they had a firm stance against it. And slowly but surely, not slowly but surely, very quickly, it seems to be reversing in some facets for sure.
Gary's got to be pissed.
Yeah, like, you don't think the SEC's on the phone with the White House a little bit over the last 48 hours? I mean, how does the E thing get flipped and then Biden's coming out, you know, 36, not even 24 hours later, you know, not even 24 hours after the ETH news, you know, the White House is saying, you know, hey, if the bill passes, we'll sign it.
Yeah. Well, I'm ready for all the positive effects that this could have on the market. I'm sure everyone else is as well. But before we let you go, we always like to leave on a lighthearted note. Sometimes the conversations can get serious and we talk about the world of finance and all this other stuff.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But we did have some
before we get to the two funny ones, we do have one that's not super lighthearted. The Grayscale CEO. True. Yeah. So Grayscale CEO Michael Shaughnessy steps down, resigns to be replaced by TradFi veteran. So we've covered it. I know you were very passionate about it. All the outflows of GBTC. I believe they set a record for outflows of an ETF in a period of time, like whatever billions of dollars it was. And obviously it came down to the fee. So people are questioning whether it was the CEO's decision for the fee or maybe it was somebody else's decision and he's got to take the fall for it. But nonetheless, a big move in the space.
Yeah. I mean, I have ranted about all of this for months. And Tivo, I know I've probably talked your ear off about it, but you can't say that you didn't see this one coming. It was just crazy seeing so many billions of dollars in outflows and then be so stubborn about lowering fees and so stubborn about doing things to keep investors on. It was weird. And we talked about how it was an unmaintainable path that they could not keep up on. Outflows have now diminished at this point, but I mean, at what cost? They've lost over half of their Bitcoin reserves. And now the Ethereum ETF's coming out and people are asking the same question. Hey, you know, is Ethereum going to be dumped in the market en masse? Are they going to do things to keep their holders in? Are they going to lower fees? Like, what's going to happen here? You know, is this going to be a repeat? And it could be. Again, I'm speculating here. I got my tinfoil hat on now. Maybe, you know, the former CEO had the same expectation and idea here of saying, hey, let's do exactly what we did with Bitcoin to the Ethereum ETF. Let's not do anything. Let's encourage people to sell off in mass. Let's cause all these outflows. And Grayscale probably went, no, you know, we're not going to do that again. We're going to take a new approach and it's time for you to go. Again, I can't prove any of that. I'm just theorizing here, but who knows? I mean, you can't have that kind of event happen and not have any kind of repercussion. And maybe the puzzle pieces fit together here, but.
Yeah, it's a head scratcher, and you'd really love to hear the conversations behind closed doors of what was the decision. At first is like, okay, it's a new market, right? People are building this new market, and you're gonna, you know, maybe be a little bit more expensive because you're the leader in the space and have been here the longest. But to not pivot at any point, I don't know what the rules are of pivoting. Maybe you have to file new things to the SEC. Yeah. I have no idea. But you would think there would be some type of movement to pivot after you lose half your stash and set a record for ETF outflows in a short period of time. But
not what you want to be known for.
Yeah, but I mean, he was a leader, before the ETFs went live. So, you know, not all hate towards his way. We wish him the best. And it'll be interesting to see what he does next. You know, where he ends up. Is it going to be in the crypto space and what projects he might be working on?
For sure. Well, we also had that the courts ruled here recently, drumroll please, that Craig Wright is indeed not Satoshi Nakamoto. Who would have known? Who would have ever have guessed this? I mean, man, up until this point, I thought we all knew who Satoshi was. But all jokes aside here, I think that this goes to a deeper point of anyone that is claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto is not Satoshi Nakamoto. Anybody who claims to know with certainty that they know who he is or any of this stuff, it's not true. No one knows who he is. If they did, and if they were him, they would move around the original wallets. They would have access to his funds. They could make a single transaction and prove it to the world, and no one has yet to do it. No one has ever come out and claimed it and done it and proved it to themselves. So I'm glad that this is finally solved. But just a little bit of a note moving forward here is that there's probably articles like this one of there's always going to be someone out there claiming to be Satoshi, and odds are they're not. And in final goodbyes here, TiVo, you know what today is?
I do know what today is.
I wish we had Aaron here for today, aka Pizza Mind, because today is Bitcoin Pizza Day. For people who do not know, a long time ago, there was a guy who paid for a couple pizzas with about 10,000 Bitcoin, I believe it was.
It was.
And man, what a decision that made. I'm curious if the pizza guy that accepted it kept the 10,000 Bitcoin. I'm curious if this guy had any more Bitcoin after that.
It was a Papa John's.
Papa John's. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And it's Bitcoin's come a long way since this happened. I mean, that was over a decade ago. And here we are today. So it's a historical event in the crypto space. We like to celebrate it. If you're curious what the Bitcoin Pizza Day is, we actually made a video on it about a year ago. So you can go back on the YouTube channel on Crypto 101, and you can find out more information on it there.
For 10,000 Bitcoin, roughly, I believe, $700 million. I think you kind of want to see the bottom right there. You'd really want the toppings to be more evenly spread for a $700 million pizza.
Yeah, you know, that guy's looking back at it. And at some point, that could legitimately be a billion-dollar mistake.
Well, do we have Laszlo as this guy? Has this guy been around talking? Is he still kicking? Like, you think if you're spending $10,000 on a pizza, you would have bought more Bitcoin. Like, back then, you don't know what's going to happen with it. But if you're holding Bitcoin back then, like, you would hope that he would still have a stash years later, right?
Maybe we hunt him down and we try to get him on a market update or something for a future weeks, and we just pick his brain about. I would assume he probably had some excess amount beyond the 10,000 that he used. You know, it's like going to buy something in a store. Do you spend your entire wallet every time you go in and buy something? Like, if you're going to pay for a pizza, are you going to spend every dollar in your wallet? Maybe sometimes, right? But the odds are there's more money in the wallet. And I would assume that that's the case for this guy as well. He went and he bought his pizzas. He still had some change left over, whether it was one Bitcoin or another 10,000. Who knows? But time will tell.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully bought more over the years too. So we hope he's doing well, or more than well even. But great week. Well, and I'll be in Austin next week with Bryce at Consensus. So check out the socials as we'll be, documenting our time in Austin.
Absolutely. Well, hey, everyone, we appreciate all of you tuning in here. As per usual, if you want to look at all the stuff that we talked about on screen, head over to the YouTube channel. We got all the visuals that we talk about there. And so if you're tuning in from Audible or Spotify or Apple Podcast or whatever it may be, and you want to see all these things on screen that we're referencing, whether it's tweets or charts or whatever it may be, head over to the YouTube channel. It's the Crypto 101 Podcast. And that's where you're going to be able to see everything, along with a lot of other content as well. We do market updates. We do the normal podcasts over there. We do all sorts of like small form videos and tutorials. And it's a really great ecosystem to kind of be plugged in, especially if you want more content that's directly correlated to the crypto markets. But that's going to round us off, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate all of you coming here. We hope everyone is just as excited about the current state of the market as we are. And we're going to see all of you at the same time, same place next week.
That's the average number of apps used by many companies. This leads to a lot of context and tab switching that drains employee focus and costs your company. Grammarly can help. Grammarly's AI works in over 500,000 apps and websites, making it easy for your team to write clearly and on brand without disrupting workflow. Join 70,000 teams who save an average of $5,000 per employee per year using Grammarly. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.